Welcome to this week's podcast of Breakthrough Church from Bayswater in Melbourne, Australia. For more details and further resources, visit breakthrough.org.au. We hope you enjoy today's message.
We're going to get into the message. We're doing our series, What I Was Made For. And that picture up there, that's our son. We took a photo of him. Not really. What I'm going to do today is we're going to start just for the first like 5 or 10 minutes. I'm just going to briefly recap what we talked about last week. So if you're somebody who was here last week and you really like to just push straight ahead, I'm really sorry, you're going to have to spend 5 minutes waiting. So why don't you turn to the person beside you, and if you don't recognize them from last week, you point to them and say, this is your fault. All right? You're making me do this. This is your fault. Oh, yeah, say it really nasty too. Actually, we went to a conference. I was playing music at a conference. I don't know if Caitlin remembers this. Quite a number of years ago, and so I was doing some worship there, and we didn't know anyone there, so it was just sort of us and the band. And we played our music, and then we went and sat down in the seats, and like we didn't know anyone. I was sitting in the end of our group, and I was sitting between Caitlin, so my sister, on one side, and some like 17-year-old girl I'd never met on the other side. Like, the place was pretty packed and it was pretty full. And the speaker gets up and he's like, ah, oh, turn to the person next to you and tell them they're looking beautiful tonight. And so I'm here, I'm like, all right, this random girl I don't know or my sister. It's like, all right, lesser of two evils. I'll go, Caitlin, you're looking beautiful tonight with all the cheery enthusiasm you can imagine I could muster up. And he's like, that's great. You turn to the other person and say, I saved you for last because you're looking even better. I'm like, all right, yeah, we can't. So, but I decided in that moment, I'm like, if I ever preach, you know, which is not very often because they don't give me many opportunities, but if I ever preach, I will not be that preacher who will tell you to turn the person next to you and say to them something really cheesy and nice, because that's just awkward. So I'll tell you to say nasty things, you know, the things you want to say but you can't. So turn to the person next to you and say, this was your fault, you know, really mean. And anyway, so that's enough. Our recap, we're looking at what I was made for. And there's sort of 3 points I want to give in this recap. The first one is that you are a masterpiece. This is what we learned about last week. And do we have our scripture up there from Ephesians, Jordan? Ephesians, where it talks about you being a masterpiece. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10 says, we have become his poetry, a recreated people that will fulfill the destiny he has given each of us, for we are joined to Jesus, the anointed one. Do you want to put up in the NLT for us? The New Living Translation, sorry, of that scripture. Should be there. Not working. That's all right. Well, you can take my word for it. We read it a lot of times last week where it says that we are his masterpiece. There we go. For we are God's masterpiece. He's created us anew in Christ Jesus so we can do the good things he planned for us long ago. Every one of you, God has actually... I wholeheartedly believe, and last week we went through scriptures and looked at this, that God has created you a masterpiece. He's made you unique. He's made you special. God did not just create a bunch of clones. He made every person special, unique, and everyone is made to do different things well. You know, the Bible talks about us being like a body. It says when we all come together, we're like a body. A body has lots of different parts. If one part tries to be like another, then it doesn't work out well. But when you just find your part, find your place in the body, and do what you were made to do, the whole thing works together really, really well. And God has made you a masterpiece. It means you're unique. It means you're valuable to God. You are so, so valuable to God. You are valuable enough to God that he sent Jesus for you. You know, that's how valuable you are. And we talked a bit about what a masterpiece is, about the difference between, you know, just a painting or something versus a masterpiece, which is unique and valuable and special. And that's what you are. You are a masterpiece created by God for something that's really unique and something that only you can do. You know, there's things that actually there is no one in the world that can do like you can. You know, that sounds like a nice feel-good statement, but it's true. God has given you a capacity to do some things like nobody else in the world can do. Some things you can do like no one else can do, and maybe that's a good thing. But some things you can do where it's like, that's really special, it's really cool. So you're made for something special, something unique, that God has made specifically for you. And that's what this whole series is about, what I was made for, is what I want to do is to look at how to discover that in yourself and how to walk in it. How to discover it and how to walk it out. So first point, I won't tell you to say it to the person next to you because I don't do that unless it's nasty. First one is, you're a masterpiece. Our second one is, don't play cricket with apples. And this was the title of the sermon last week. I just think that's a good piece of advice. It's totally irrelevant to everything else. And we'll move on. No, not really. Don't play cricket with apples. And I'll let you, if you want to get the all the context for this story, have a listen to the sermon from last week. You can actually find it online at breakthrough.org.au. The sermon's there. You can listen to the whole thing. When we talked about this story, don't play cricket with apples, what we were basically saying is don't try and use the good things that you do for God. Remember, we're talking about God made you to do good things. Don't try and use those good things to make yourself feel right with God. You know, don't try and please God by doing good works or good things. Don't try and use the good works or the good things that you do to satisfy your conscience. You'll never actually be able to do that. And, you know, this is like a really key, it's really the key of Christianity. It's the key of why we exist, is that, you know, this is the gospel in a nutshell. None of us are actually good enough for God. We all sin. We all mess up. Believe it or not, I occasionally mess up. Every one of us messes up, and but God doesn't come to us and say, you need to be better. You need to stop breaking the rules. You need to be good enough. God comes to us and says, you've messed up. You're full of sin. You're not right. But then I will give you by my grace, the free gift through Jesus, that all you have to do is accept it and you can be made clean. You can be made right. That is the basic premise of everything we believe and everything we do as Christians, is that, hey, I've sinned, I've messed up, but God by his grace has given me a free gift and I've just accepted that. And that's all there is to it. That is the basic premise of what we believe and what we do. So the good things, the good works we talk about, when we talk about finding your place and doing good works and doing these things, we are not talking about in any sense doing them to please God. We're not talking about doing them to satisfy your conscience, because if you try and do that, you will be as successful as playing cricket with apples. And again, listen to that message to understand that whole context. But you cannot do it. Good works will not be able to ease your conscience. Good works will not be able to make you right with God. Good works will not be able to actually make you feel okay about yourself. You can work as hard as you want and you will not be able to do enough to feel okay about yourself. The only way that you can truly be clean and free from all that is just to accept God's gift of grace. And then the good works and the good things we're talking about come out of that place where we say, God, you have loved me. I've accepted your gift of grace. Now I'm going to go and do these good things, because that's your best life. You know, this is what we're talking about. Yes, it's God wants you to. Yes, we're talking about glorifying God and doing good works that will bless other people and work together. But ultimately, this is your best life. It is the most fulfilling, the most joyful, the most exciting, the best life you could live, is to discover what you're made for and live that out. And that doesn't mean that, you know, every one of us has to be a missionary to the back blocks of Africa or go and preach overseas. No, find what your place is, what your part is. It might be being in the workplace. It might be just being the best grandparent to your grandkids. It might be just loving the people in your neighborhood, in your community. It might just be so many things that are so simple, but just saying, this is my place. This is what I'm made to do. And I'm going to live that out, not in any sense trying to please God or satisfy anything else, or not trying to pull strings and keep everyone happy and impress everyone and do this so that they think I'm good enough, or the pastor thinks I'm good enough, or I'm good as Caleb or anything else. But it's simply about just finding your place where, God loves me and I'm totally okay with that, and I'm just going to live out this life and find my place and live my best life. Yeah? So that's point two. Then point number three is, what breaks your heart? And this is where we started to look at the first part of what I said earlier, of how do you discover what you were made for. And we were looking at the story of Nehemiah. Can I tell you a quick story before we go into that? I'm going to step back a step, where we were saying how, you know, you're not good enough, but you can just accept God's grace. You know how I said that I'll only tell you to say mean things to the person beside you? Last week, I told you to turn to the person beside you and say, you're not good enough. Say, you know, because you can never do enough good things to be good enough for God. And Kyra, my wife, was sitting next to Sandy. Why don't you put your hand up, Sandy? Wave to everyone. And so I said, turn to the person next to you and say, you're not good enough. So Sandy turned to Kyra, and what did he say? She said, you're beautiful. She's like, I can't bring myself to say it. You're beautiful. So I'm going to give you one more chance to practice. Turn to the person beside you and tell them you're not good enough. Yeah, I don't think you said it again. So anyway, that was point two. Point three, what breaks your heart? This is where we're starting to look at, and Kyra and Caitlin have beautifully mentioned this already, so they're starting to look at discovering what you were made for. Discovering your place, discovering your part. We're looking at a book in the Bible called Nehemiah as sort of a case study of just looking at learning how to discover what you're made for and how to walk in it. So for this point, what we're actually going to do is we're just going to put up, if you could put up the timeline for me, and we're just going to go back and read the first chapter of Nehemiah again, just as a sort of brief introduction to what we're looking at today. But before we read that first chapter, I want to give you a quick timeline of what's happened here, so where we're looking in the book. So the first thing that happens is in 597 BC, Babylon conquers Judah. So Judah, the people on the earth that are following God, basically. They're God's followers, they're God's people, and they've been conquered by Babylon. So Babylon has come in and eaten them up, and they've all been taken away as slaves. Next one. In 537 BC, so 60 years later, so Judah has been held captive to Babylon for 60 years, and then after the 60 years, Persia conquered Babylon. So basically all Babylon slaves become Persia's slaves. So now the Jewish people are saying, oh, well, now our masters have been taken over, but they've been taken by the Persians, so now they serve the Persians. And sort of in a brief nutshell, what happens there is God gives them favor with the Persian kings, and they allow them to actually go back to Jerusalem. So the king says, you guys are actually free to go. We're not going to hold you here as slaves anymore. You can go back to Jerusalem. And he said, you can actually go back and rebuild your city and rebuild the temple and basically live there again. So they're still sort of, the Persians are still in command, but they're giving them the freedom to go back and rebuild their city and live and actually follow their God and that sort of thing, which is awesome. So it takes 20 years for them to actually go back and for the temple to be rebuilt. This, a lot of what happens here is recorded in the book of Ezra. Ezra and Nehemiah are almost like one continual story. They're two books in the Bible. But in Ezra, we see how a man named Ezra basically came back and led the rebuilding of the temple, which in itself is an awesome story. So that was in 516 BC. So what's called the remnant has gone back. So the remnant of the Judah, people from Judah have gone back. They've rebuilt the temple. And then 445 BC, so 71 years later, we have the book of Nehemiah. So Nehemiah is from Judah. He's one of these people. He knows that his people have gone back and have rebuilt the temple and are inhabiting the city again. But Nehemiah, he actually lives with the king. He's a cupbearer to the king of Persia. So he's not in Jerusalem. He's not with his people, but his heart is there. But he's serving the king as a cupbearer to the king. So that's the backstory of what we found. So we're going to look, if you want to put up the first chapter of Nehemiah for me in the NLT, we're going to read that and just have a quick look at what happens in this book. So with that understanding and that backstory, if you want to put the first verse up for us, we'll read that all together. So it says, these are the memoirs of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. That's definitely how you say it. Hanani, one of my brothers, came. So this is Nehemiah speaking in first person. Hanani, one of my brothers, came to visit me with some other men who had just arrived from Judah. So his brother and some men from Judah have come to him to give him news. And he asked them about the Jews who had returned there. So he's like, how's everything going? Who'd returned there from captivity and how things were going in Jerusalem. So he says, how's everything going? How's my home city going? And they said to me, things are not going well for those who returned to the province of Judah. They are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem has been torn down. The gates have been destroyed by fire. So Nehemiah hears this news that basically everything's going terribly. The walls have been destroyed. The people are in disgrace. The city's in ruins. It's not going well. So Nehemiah's response then in verse 4 is really interesting. And this is what we looked at last week. It says, when I heard this, I sat down and wept. In fact, for days I mourned, fasted, and prayed to the God of heaven. And what we see here is that this news really, really broke Nehemiah's heart. He heard this news and his response was to pour out his heart. He just fell to the floor and he wept and he fasted and he prayed before God for days and days and days. And to me, that seems almost like an overreaction. You know, it's like, you think most people would respond like, oh, that's really sad. Oh, well, we move on. You know what I mean? Lots of people knew about this. There was lots and lots of people from Judah. Lots of them knew that the city was in ruins. I'm sure none of them were happy about it, but it was just like, oh, that's sad. But Nehemiah's response was next level. He was like, this is awful. This is heartbreaking. This must be fixed. We have to do something about this. And that sense of breaking his heart was what we looked at last week. And that can be a real sense for what you were made for. Because you will often find that what you were made for, what God has put inside your heart, you'll see it not right, and it will break your heart. And it was actually awesome to hear messages, get messages and hear from some of the people who were in church last week who said like, ah, I've always known that this really upsets me more than it should, but I didn't really know why. It's like, because part of what I was made for is to fix it. Part of what I was made for is to do this, so when I see it not happening, when I see it broken, it's like, oh, it really deeply upsets me. And so that was where we landed last week. We were looking at what breaks your heart. You know, what is it that when you see it, it's like, oh, that's just, I have to fix that. You know, I have to do something about that. And so that's really the first part of this series is sort of discovering what you were made for. And a big part of that is what breaks your heart. So, you know, I do encourage you, if you weren't here last week, go back and listen to that and have a think about what breaks my heart. What are things that just upset me more than they should? What are things that really get to me that I'm like, I have to fix that. I have to do something about it. And we had a great chat in our small group on Thursday where we looked at this concept in a bit more depth, but we also looked at some other things that can go alongside that to understand more of what you were made to do. And we were saying how the other side of that is also what excites your heart. Because when you see it and you think about fixing it, it lifts your heart. It excites you. It makes you joyful. It's like, when I see it broken, it breaks my heart. But when I see it happening, it lifts my heart. It excites me. Or when I think about going and doing it, it excites me. There's a sense where this is what I was made for. So I don't want to give any sense that it's all doom and gloom and you just got to find the things that make you sad. No, find what excites you just as much. You know, find what breaks your heart when it's broken and what excites you when it's happening. And that's a big part of what God's made you to do. So that was last week. Looking at what are we made for? What have we been made to do? What is your part? So now those who were here last week and had fallen asleep, you can now awaken, and we're going to move into new territory, brand new content. So this week, what I wanted to look at is sort of coming to the next point of what do you do with what you were made for? It's sort of like I'm starting to get this sense in this... Imagine that you're in the place where it's like, I'm starting to get this sense and this feeling of what I was made for. I'm getting this feeling of what breaks my heart. I'm getting this feeling of what excites me. I'm getting this sense in my heart like, God has made me for this. This is part of what I was made to do. This is a dream. This is a desire. This is a vision I've got to do something great. What do you do with that? You know, it's great to say, yes, this is what I was made for, but what are some next steps you can take? What is something you can then go and do to say, all right, now that I sort of am getting this feeling, this is what I'm going to do next. So we're just going to look at that again, looking from the book of Nehemiah. I should also say that the title of my sermon today, if you could put it up, is Everybody Gets a Nissan. So that's this week. So you're excited? This, you picked the right week to come. Everybody Gets a Nissan. Do you want to put my little meme up that sort of inspired this? Everybody, so today I'm your Oprah Winfrey, and I'm saying everybody gets a Nissan. And I've actually got here, you ready? Do you want to get your Nissan? So I've got here a little sheet, which I might get. Brooke, do you want to go around and distribute these? You can choose the first color Nissan, go for it. And we've got a little sheet that you're going to get today that says on the top, everyone gets a Nissan. And it's got a picture beside it of a Nissan. So you get to find out which Nissan you get. We've got this little green SUV type thing. I don't really know Nissans. Does anyone know what that one's called? Qashqai, is it? Yeah, there you go. All right, make sure Will gets a green one. Brooke, This little red fella, I don't know, that's a little smaller one. Anyone know? Yep. All right. Well, if you get one, bad luck. Oh, that one looks a bit more fancy. Again, I don't know what it is. I'm getting a Navara, so I'll take that one. But you have this, and on this sheet, you can see there's 6 points down the side. And basically, the point of this is that today we're going to look at 6 reflection points for you as you discover what I was made for. So if you would like to, you don't have to, but you can use a pen, and as we go through, fill out, write those questions out. The point of this, what I'd love to do is write the questions out. As you have thoughts today in answering them, you can start to jot some answers down. But I'd love you to take this home as something that you can then start to think about answers to these questions, okay? Because these are not questions that you'll be able to just reel off answers today, but these are questions for you to reflect on and to think about as our next steps now that you've discovered what you're made to do and learning that everyone gets in this. Does that make sense? All right. So I'll let them hand those out, and then we'll go through our first step reading in Nehemiah. All right, most of us have got our Nissan. We're trying to decide. All right, so let's have a look here. If you want to put up the scripture for me that we just read, where we see it break Nehemiah's heart, and we're going to read on from there for a little bit. So here's Nehemiah when he's just gotten the news. When I heard this, I sat down and wept. In fact, for days I mourned, fasted, and prayed to the God of heaven. I said last week, this sounds a lot like me after we lost the grand final last year. And I said, O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant. Just as we read through this prayer, notice how many times he says something to do with God's covenant or God's promise. So God of heaven, awesome God who keeps his covenant of unfailing love with those who love him. Keep going through there. Those who love him and obey his commands. Oh, I think they're getting their Nissans back at the screens. So those who love him and obey his commands, there we go. Listen to my prayer, look down and see me praying night and day for your people Israel. I confess that we have sinned against you. Yes, even my own family and I have sinned. We have sinned terribly by not obeying the commands, decrees and regulations you gave us through your servant Moses. So again, he's talking about the commands and decrees you gave us, the covenant that God made with his people. He's like, we didn't obey it. But please remember what you told your servant Moses, remember your word, your promise. If you're unfaithful to me, I'll scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commands and live by them, then even if you're exiled to the ends of the earth, I will bring you back to the place I've chosen for my name to be honored. The people you rescued by your great power and strong hands are your servants. O Lord, please hear my prayer. Listen to the prayer of those of us who delight in honoring you. Please grant me success today by making the king favorable to me. Put it into his heart to be kind to me. In those days, I was the king's cupbearer. So Nehemiah's response here is really, really interesting. His first response, obviously, is very sad, and he cries out to God. He pours out his heart. But in pouring out his heart, he doesn't just come to God and say, oh, God, it's terrible. The walls are in ruins. It's all broken. Oh, woe is me. My people are dying. It's terrible. He comes to God and he's like, all right, I know everything's bad. He's like, we've mucked up badly and we're living in the consequences of what we've done. All right, we've sinned, we've walked away from you. We are living in the consequences of that, God. I recognize that. But now, you said to us, if we come to you and follow you, you will rebuild us. You will bring us back. You gave us your word. You gave us your promise. This is what you said to us. And so now I'm calling on that. I know we've mucked up. I know we don't deserve it. But God, you said that you would bring us back and you would build us up. And that's what I'm calling us. That's what I'm asking you. So my point number one for you to put next to your number one on Everyone Gets a Nissan is, what has God said to me? When you look at what breaks your heart, I challenge you for your first response to be, all right, now God, this breaks my heart. Now what have you said about this? Don't just say, oh, this breaks my heart, I want to fix it, or I want to do this, I've got this vision to do this, it excites me to do this, I've got this dream for this. We've got to come back and begin and say, God, what have you said? What promises have you given me in your word? What have you said to me individually? What have you spoken to me through people I trust or people at church? Or what is it that you have said? So number one, What has God said to you? And I really want you to think about that, because that's a really crucial point of going from, oh, this breaks my heart, I feel all upset about it, or I feel this excitement about this, or I feel sort of like this is the part I am to be or what I'm made to do. That takes you from that place to being, now God has said this, so this is what I'm going to do. Does that make sense? God's word gives you an anchor. It gives you something solid to hold on to. Like you could see with Nehemiah, it went from the walls are broken, it's all terrible, it all breaks my heart, to God, you've promised this, so I'm calling on this promise. I want to walk in this. I want to see this happen. Does that make sense? All right, so number one, what has God said to you? So I want you to go away and start to think about that. Think of what God has said to you. All right, we're going to go on, and now we're going to go to some new territory and read Nehemiah chapter 2. So he's just prayed this prayer to God, and he's, remember the last thing he asked God. If you actually, we'll go to the last verse of chapter 1, Nehemiah, he said, put it into he asked, let the king be favorable to me, put it into his heart to be kind to me. In those days, yeah, please grant me success today by making the king favorable to me, put it into his heart to be kind to me. And in those days, I was the king's cupbearer. So then go on to chapter 2, verse 1. Early the following spring, in the month of Nisan, during the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was serving the king his wine. I had never before appeared sad in his presence. And the king asked me, why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick to me. You must be deeply troubled. Then I was terrified. But I replied, long live the king. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins. The gates have been destroyed by fire. The king asked, well, how can I help you? So I want to, we're going to pause there. We're going to read the rest in a couple of minutes. But I want you to look at what happened here is Nehemiah serves the king. He's the king's cupbearer. I don't know exactly how often he is before the king. I wasn't around back then. Maybe the person next to you looks like they were, and so you could ask them. But I don't know how it worked. I don't know how often he was there. But as the king's cupbearer, my understanding is he would be around the king a fair bit. He would be the one who would come in and serve the king his drinks. My understanding is daily he would be serving the king his drinks. If that's wrong, you can write me nasty things on Facebook. But he would be seeing the king a lot, basically. And he's come, and suddenly, on this day, for whatever reason, the king said, hey, Nehemiah, what's going on? I notice you, I recognize you. And Nehemiah suddenly has this opportunity to ask the king, my city's in ruins, I want to go back and rebuild it, basically. And remember his prayer in chapter 1, he said to God, please give me favor with the king. Let him give me favor. And then here, suddenly on this day, the king's like, what's going on? Nehemiah says, this is happening. And the king, the rest of this story is that the king will actually send him back with a whole lot of resource and all sorts of other things. Oh, thank you. Send him back to rebuild the city and to do all that. So suddenly he has this amazing opportunity with the king. Now, when did this opportunity come? Do you remember what it said in verse 1? Nisan, one person was listening. In the month of Nisan. That's probably not how you pronounce it, but I'm just going to assume it is. Now, if you look back in chapter 1, it says that chapter 1, when Nehemiah's brother and his friends came, that was in a month called Chislev. I'm sure there are Jewish people rolling in their graves as I pronounce these names, I'm sure. In the month of Chislev, his brother and the people came, and he heard this news, and he prayed to God. And then in the month of Nisan, he suddenly had this opportunity with the king. The way that Nehemiah reads, like reading those scriptures, it sort of seems like it just happened back to back, didn't it? It felt like, well, then basically the next day I was with the king and this happened. But the month of Chislev was in roughly November, our time. The month of Nisan was in roughly May, our time. So that's at least 6 months that have passed between chapter 1 and chapter 2. So what Nehemiah has had is this, his brothers come, he's heard this news, it's broken his heart, he's cried out to God, he's said, God, you've said this, this is your promise, this is what I want to see, I ask you, give me favor with the king, all right, let's do it. And then for 6 months, nothing has happened. He's been in front of the king probably daily, having prayed to God, give me favor with the king, give me the opportunity to go back and fix this, but for 6 months, nothing happens. Can you imagine how frustrating that would be every day serving the King is one, every day doing his thing, doing his thing, doing his thing, doing his thing, knowing that his heart is bursting for Jerusalem. That's 6 more months where the walls are destroyed and his people are in disarray. The gates are burned away. That's 6 more months where he's just imagining that and dreaming and desiring and yearning to go and fix it, but he's just got to keep doing his thing day after day after day after day. Can you imagine how frustrating that is? Can anyone relate to that? Can anyone in any sense feel a sense where it's like, God, I've got this dream in my heart. You've given me something to do, what I was made for. I long to do this. I know it's from you. You've given me your word. This is what you've said to me. All right, let's go and do it. And then you're just back to the daily grind, just doing the same thing day after day after day after day. Like, God, I was full of faith. I was praying your word to you. It was all good. But it's just doing the same thing day after day. Has anyone ever felt like that? Yeah, about 3 people. That's great. Yeah. All of us have, I'm sure, felt that way in some sense. And so what Nehemiah teaches us is that there was nothing on that day where he went into the king that would have made him know this is the day that it's going to happen. You know, suddenly today you're going to get your favor with the king. Suddenly today it's going to happen. So my second reflection point I want you to write down is, what might my Nissan look like? And don't think of a picture of a car now, but I truly believe that God will give everyone a Nissan. Yes. You know, you could just take that and put that on Facebook and we get a whole lot of really weird comments, I'm sure. But I believe everyone here, God will give you a Nissan. When you have got something in your heart, something that you desire and something that you're praying to him for, there will come a moment where suddenly, as if the king says to you, now what do you want? You know, the king said to Nehemiah, now what do you want? God will give you that moment. So think, what might my Nissan look like? What is the opportunity that I'm waiting for? What is the opportunity that I'm praying for? What is this thing, this Nissan, this moment that might occur that I would suddenly go from this waiting, waiting, waiting and praying to suddenly like, well, I'm doing it. And that's so like God that often it'll be like, wait, 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 bang, whoop, suddenly I'm in it. So what might my Nissan look like? Is it a conversation with someone? Is it suddenly a connection that someone comes and it's like, wow, you're the person I've been waiting for? Is it a resource? I've been waiting and needing this and suddenly it's like, oh, now I can actually do it. You know, is it an opportunity? What might your Nissan look like? And again, you don't have to answer that right now, but I'd love you to think about that. Think about what might your moment be, your Nissan moment. Nehemiah's was the king saying, what's going on? What do you want from me? What might your Nissan look like? And now, obviously, when your Nissan comes, it's going to be too late for you to get ready for it. So what I want to talk about, the next 4 points, are about what can you do now to be ready for that Nissan. You know, and we're going to look through these scriptures again about Nehemiah and look at what he did to be ready for that moment. So if you go, let's just read through it again. Chapter 2, go back to verse 1. And we'll just have a brief look at that again. So it says, early the following spring in the month of Nisan, during the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was serving the king his wine. I'd never before appeared sad in his presence. So the king asked me, why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick to me. You must be deeply troubled. The first thing I want to note here is that Nehemiah, when his Nissan came, he was faithfully serving in the place where he'd been put. He was faithfully doing the job he'd been given and was faithfully serving. He didn't actually say, well, now I've got a calling to go and rebuild a city, so I'm bigger than this. He didn't say, I'm now bigger than being the king's cupbearer. I am city builder. I leave all that behind and just walk away. He had that calling. He had that heart in him, but he was faithfully serving where he'd been placed. And I believe this with all my heart. And if you remember one thing today, I reckon this is a key to remember. Remember all of them, but if you only remembered one, remember that your Nissan will find you faithfully serving where you've been put. You know, when you faithfully serve in the place where God has put you, he will find you there. Your Nissan will find you. You know, and we see that multiple times in the Bible. We've got Nehemiah and his faithful service to the king. What about the story of David? he was faithfully serving as a shepherd boy, serving out in the fields. God had called him to be the next king of Israel. And he was just serving out in the fields, being a faithful shepherd. And the prophet came and said to Jesse, "Where's all your sons?" And he brought them all out. He said, "No, there's one more." And they found David serving out in the fields and said, "God has chosen you to be the next king." Because it said, what has he found? A man after his own heart. David, the servant-hearted man, his Nissan found him. You think of the story of Joseph, who was called by God to be a great leader, and he was found in prison in Egypt, faithfully serving and faithfully doing what he was called to do. His Nissan found him. God found him. And wherever you are, if you are faithfully serving where you are, your Nissan will find you. And I think it's awesome how God's brought this together, because God's gave me this message to preach now, and we've happened to also launch the launch pad in the same month that I'm preaching this, and it's the month of Nissan also, so just, you know, putting it out there, because I think there's often a feeling sometimes in churches where people will say, well, I find I'm called to do this, so why would I serve in church doing something below that? Do you know what I mean? I'm called to be a preacher. I'm called to be on the stage. So I can't just serve in the car park because that's below me. Do you know what I mean? I'm called to be on the stage leading worship. You know, I'm called to be doing missions overseas. I'm called to do this. God's given me a dream to do this. So sorry, I can't come and stack the chairs after church because I'm Mr. Big Missionary. Or I'm, but that just completely flies in the face of everything we see in the Bible. And every story we see, their Nissan finds them. Their moment, their opportunity, their calling finds them when they are faithfully serving where they're called to be, and generally in something well below their pay grade. Something far below their calling. You know, Nehemiah is called to lead the city, to basically be the mayor of Jerusalem and rebuild it from scratch. Yet he's there just serving the king his drinks. Serving the king's one. David, called to be the king of this whole nation, and he's out in the field just looking after sheep. God, your Nissan, your moment will find you often in a place where you're serving well below your pay grade, well below what your opportunity is. So I want you to take a minute. We're just going to stop for just a second here and just think about, I'm just going to give you a minute just to reflect yourself. Think about what might my Nissan look like. And where can I serve now to be ready for that? Where has God put me now? That's our point three, our third reflection point. Where has God placed me to serve faithfully today? You know, I think one of the great points about this that I see is how when God gives them a Nissan moment or gives them a dream, it's not, he doesn't immediately place them in the fulfillment of that, but he places them on a journey towards it. And I think that's a big part of this, is you've got to recognize and say, God, you've given me this dream and I'm on this journey towards it. I don't quite understand. God's journey and path towards it won't always make total sense to you. But I'm going to serve wholeheartedly and faithfully where I am today. You know, I'm going to think about where are you? Where can you serve faithfully today? Where can you serve with all your heart? Where can you serve to the place where you say, I'm going to do this with all my heart. I'm going to wholeheartedly serve. I was listening to an awesome podcast yesterday from a guy called Chris Vallotton over in Bethel Church in America. And he was talking about serving the city and had that they built up this culture amongst their people and amongst their students that they said, when you go and you are serving out in the city, you know, they would do awesome work in the city, like feeding people and building roads and just doing all sorts of things to serve their city. And they would have this concept. They said, I'm not just shoveling dirt. I'm changing the world. And he said, one of the city officials, I don't know exactly who it was, he was basically doing a presentation to them about the work they did. And he said, the city official came to me and he said, I finally understand why your people work with the attitude they do. Because he's like, they don't think they're just shoveling dirt. They think they're changing the world. And he's like, you're exactly right, except I'll just correct you. They're not shoveling dirt. They are changing the world. And I thought, what an awesome picture for us to have as we are serving where we are. I want you to say, I'm not just, you know, I'm going to pick any sort of thing. I'm not just serving breakfast to kids twice a week. I'm changing the world, and I am faithfully serving where I am to be ready to step into the next, the mission that God's got for me. You know, I'm not just doing this for the sake of it. I'm not just doing this because I have to. I'm doing this with such a heart of joy and faithfulness and a desire to serve because I know that I'm on a journey to my mission. And I know that this is the next step in my journey. It may not look like it. It may not make sense. It may not be a lot of fun, but this is the next step on my journey. So I'm doing it with all the joy and enthusiasm that I can possibly muster. I'm going to be so faithful in my service. You know, I was thinking about, you know, for myself in this and or stories I'd heard, like obviously music is a huge passion of mine and I've got, you know, desires to use music and that's a big part of me for what I was made for. And I remember even before I ever led worship at church here and I used to be serving with the super kids, which, you know, that was not my what I was made for. I was not made to work with little kids. But I would be down there and we would have, now, I would have these like four kids. I'm like, all right, I've got four kids. We're going to have worship. So I'd get my guitar out and two of them were interested in sitting on the slide picking their nose. But I'm like, that's all right. One of them's worshiping. We can do this. We're going to have church. And I remember in that moment, God challenging me that to me, I had to worship and as wholeheartedly with that one child as I would with you, as I would one day with a stadium with 10,000 people. I do not care what it looks like. I'm going to serve and do it wholeheartedly with all my heart. So, my challenge to you, that was point number three still, where has God placed me so that I can serve while I'm on the journey? And I do believe your church is a great place to start. This is not a plug for we need more people to run the audio desk. So if you feel like that's your place to serve, come to see us after. No, this is genuinely discovering your best life. This is a great environment to start to get amongst that and to serve. So I encourage you, if you haven't already, do the launch pad because that's what it's all about and that's what it's there for. So that was point number three. Point number four, for this one, we're going to keep reading the next couple of verses in Nehemiah. So we're up to, I think, verse two or three. We'll just read again. So the king asked me, "Why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick to me. You must be deeply troubled. Then I was terrified, but I replied, "Long live the king. How can I not be sad for the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins and the gates have been destroyed by fire." I love that in there it says, "I was terrified." If you go back one for us, the king came to him and said, "What's going on?" And it says, "I was terrified." Think about it, Nehemiah has been waiting 6 months for this moment. But then suddenly, today happened to be the day, he gives the king his wine and the king's like, "Hey, what's going on?" And Nehemiah's like, "This is it. This is the moment." You know, he was packing his pants is how I would translate that today. He was terrified. And my next point for you, reflect number four, is how will it be scary and how will I need to be bold? For Nehemiah, it was very scary. He had to say to the king, "Okay, I want to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the city. I want to do it." He had to say that to the king who he served. It was his job. It was his king. This was not just saying, you know, this is not just talking to his boss. This was talking to the king. And your nissen will be quite scary. It genuinely will be. It will probably be outside your comfort zone. There will probably be a lack of provision or security, seemingly. It might involve confronting people or issues. It might involve saying something that you're really scared to. It will be scary. It will involve taking a step outside of your comfort zone. So I challenge you now, get ready for that. Recognize, I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to take this step. How can I be ready? Build your faith. You know, build your faith in God's word and trust in Him that says, when that comes, I'm going to be ready. I'm going to be bold. I'm going to step out. I can promise you it will be very scary. If it's not, it's probably not a nissen. It's probably just another regular day. But when your nissen day comes, it will be scary. So how do you need to be bold and how do you need to step out in that? Let's keep reading where we're just up to. So the king asked me, "Why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick. You must be troubled." Then I was terrified. I replied, "Long live the king. How can I not be sad? The city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins. The gates have been destroyed by fire." So then the king asked, "Well, how can I help you?" With a prayer to the God of heaven, I replied, "If it pleases the king, and if you're pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried." Quick pause there for one sec. I like that one point there, he said, "If you're pleased with me, your servant." You know, Nehemiah had so much confidence in his faithful service to the king that actually empowered, this is sort of going back on the previous point, but his faithful service to the king beforehand now empowered his request. If he had stopped that faithful service to the king, he wouldn't have actually had the power to make this request. So that's just a really good extra point bonus you get. So if you're pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried. The king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked, "How long will you be gone? When will you return?" After I told him how long I would be gone, the king agreed to my request. So my next point to you, point number five, is how do I need to be ready? Nehemiah was actually ready for this. The king came to him. What an amazing moment. The king came to him and said, "What do you want?" Basically, "What can I do for you?" What an amazing moment to have the king of a whole region come to you and say, "What do you want?" Nehemiah in that moment was ready to know what he was actually asking for. You know, he was ready. He said, "This is what I want. This is what I'm asking for." So how do you need to be ready? Let me give you some questions, and you can write some of these down if they sort of resonate with you. But what are you asking for? What is it you actually want? Are you ready enough that you know this is actually what I want? Like, really, specifically. Like, if I came to you and after church and said, what do you want? I'm giving it to you and resourcing it for you right now. Tell me what you want. Are you ready to tell me specifically enough that we could actually do it? Or do you have just a vague, airy-fairy sort of idea? What skills do you need? And do you have them? And if you don't, go get them. Where can you get them? How can you develop those skills? Is your heart ready? Is your heart and your walk with Jesus in a place that you're actually ready? Is your character ready? Is your character ready to take on the challenges of what will come next? Are your finances ready? Are your finances set up in a place that enables you to step into that? You know, do you have things like, do you have debts that are holding you back from being able to step out? You know, do you have things that say, I'm not ready. Are you tied down in a way that you can't? Are you ready? There's a lot more, but I'm just going to leave you with those. Are you actually ready to step in? You know, if your Nissan came tomorrow, would you be like, "Yep, I'm ready, let's do it"? Or would you be like, "Oh dear God, I need a day or two or a week or a month or a year. Just give me some time." Are you ready if your Nissan came tomorrow? Nehemiah was ready. He was scared. He was freaking out, but he was ready. He knew what he was asking the king for. Now look at this next part of it. Look at how, look at just how ready Nehemiah was. If we read the next few scriptures, so Nehemiah's just said. Actually, just go back one verse for us, if you don't mind, Jay. Just back where we were. So the king asked him how long he'd be gone. After I told him how long I'd be gone, it says the king agreed to my request. I also said to the king. So now the king hasn't asked him here. The king's asked him and he's answered. And now Nehemiah said, "Oh, also, by the way, if it pleases the king, let me have letters addressed to the governors of the province west of the Euphrates River, instructing them to let me travel safely through their territories on my way to Judah. And please give me a letter addressed to Asaph, the manager of the king's forest, instructing him to give me timber. I will need it to make beams for the gates of the temple fortress, for the city's walls, and for a house for myself." So Nehemiah has basically said to the king, "Oh, also, by the way, I need you to give me favor with all the people in the region so I can get through easily. And I need you to provide all the timber. So I'm not just asking you to let me go and do this project. I'm asking you to actually provide everything we need for it." You know, he's asking for enough timber to build the walls and the gates of a city. So this is not like, "Give me some timber to build a shed out the side." This is serious amounts of timber. And so, give me some timber to build a house for myself, because I'd like a nice place to live while I'm there. He was seriously ready with, "These are the specifics of what I'll need." He'd prepared and he'd planned before, "This is what we'll need, and this is what I'm asking you for. You're the one who's giving me this." And have a look at the king's response there. It said, "The king granted these requests because the gracious hand of God was on me." Oh, there we go. On me. That's a nice way to finish. The gracious hand of God was on me. This phrase, "the gracious hand of God was on me," I don't know exactly how many times. I didn't count them. But it is used many, many times throughout the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, which, as I said, are sort of a single story combined. The gracious hand of God was on me. And what we see every single time is they get this amazing favor with kings, with people in authority, with resource, all sorts of things. And they say, this happened because God's gracious hand was on me. Some translations actually translate that the hand of God's favor was on me. And they say, basically they're saying, my project, what I was doing, this was from God. His favor and his grace was on it. And so the king did this. Not because I'm anything special, not because I deserved it, but because God's grace was on me, God's favor was on me, and so this all happened. You know, think about what Nehemiah asked for. He said, could you not just let me go? Could you resource the whole project, and could you resource me and give me enough for my house while we go and do that? And because God's grace, the hand of God's grace, his favor was on him, the king said, yep, go and do it. Go and do that. What amazing favor to receive. So my final point to you, number six, if you want to put it on the screen for us, is if the hand of God's favor is on me, how should I be audacious? Now, I think it'll come up in just a sec. If the hand of God's favor is on me, how should I be audacious? You know, that's what I so see here with Nehemiah. You see it with Ezra as well. They were so audacious. Nehemiah was talking to the king, and he's like, the king said, what can I give you? Nehemiah said this. The king said, all right. And then he said, oh, actually, I also want this and this and this as well. I'm going to go way above and beyond, and I'm going to step out and be audacious because I've got God's favor on this. This is not my project. This is not me. This is God's project. And I think that's sort of the final point I want to give you here is when you do this, like we sort of heard, it came through the service already. I'm not just talking about this being your project. When you find this is what I was made for, you're now, when you're like, what breaks my heart because it breaks God's heart, you're now stepping into a place where this is no longer just my thing. This is God's thing. And God says, well, my favor, my grace is on this. So you don't need to worry about the provision. You don't need to worry about the resource. You don't need to worry about that stuff because this is that's my responsibility. You know, and how audacious would you be? How brave would you be if you truly, truly believed that? If you truly had a revelation that this is not my thing, this is not my project, this is not my vision, this is not my dream, this is God's. And I'm just the one living it out, and I'm just the one fulfilling it. I'm the one walking it out. I heard this amazing statement that the dad shared with me the other day. And again, I think this was from Bethel and their school of ministry. They would get all their new students in the room, and they would give them a piece of paper and they would say, now I want you to imagine that you're 10 times braver than you are. If you were 10 times braver, what would you ask for? And just get them to write down the first thing that pops into their head. And I want you to think about that with that sixth point. If you were 10 times braver than you were, if you were 100 times braver than you are, if bravery and audacity was no worry for you, what would you ask for? What would you do? Sorry, not just what would you ask for, what would you do? If the hand of God's favor is on you, what could you do? How audacious can you be? How willing can you be to step out? Imagine that. Just think for a moment. If I was 100 times braver than I am, what would I do? What's the first thing that jumps in your heart? And that's probably a good thing to write down and to think about. If this was no issue to you, what would you do? Now I'm going to give you we're just going to give you one more minute just to reflect on that and to think about that. And then I'm going to ask the band, we're going to sing this song Into the Day, written by a really cool musician. I wanted to sing this because the first verse in this song, it says, you're feeling like you've been standing in this place for all your life. You're waiting for the moment to arrive, but it never comes. You've been waiting here so long. Maybe now's the time to step beyond the shore. And that's exactly what I'm preaching to you today. You know, maybe you're in that place where it's like, you've had your Chislev the first month. It's like, oh, this breaks my heart. I want to do this. I've got this dream, this desire. I know I'm made for something. I know I'm made to do this. I know I'm made to do something. But I don't know how. I don't know where to go. I need the opportunity. And it's like, you feel like you've been standing in this place for all your life. I'm just waiting. I'm waiting. I'm waiting. But maybe today is your day to take a step, you know? Take a step and be ready for your Nissan. God might be saying to you, take a step because your Nissan is coming, but I need you to be ready. I need you to be ready when it comes. When it comes, it's too late to get ready. It's too late to prepare.
Well, God, we thank you. I thank you that you have a Nissan for every person in this room. And I pray for every person here that you would give us such a such a wisdom, such an insight. I pray that we would be able to see your heart, that we would be able to see what's in your heart. Like we prayed that in that song, break our heart for what breaks yours, that you would give us that understanding of this is in your heart and this is what I was made for. This is part of what I was made to do. And I pray for every person here, give us such a clarity to be able to walk into the day, a clarity to be able to take the next step, a clarity that says, this is my next step. God, I feel like that's the key. We don't need to see the whole path. We don't need to see the whole journey, but you have got a next step for every single one of us. Show us what that next step is. Maybe that our next step is from right back what we shared at the start, where we said we just need to accept your grace and accept your love. We need to stop trying to please you or keep you happy or thinking about this as a set of rules. We just need to take a deep breath and say we accept your grace. We accept your love, and we're going to live out of that place. Maybe our next step is to say, I'm going to get ready. I'm going to stop just waiting. I'm going to get ready. I'm going to take a step. I'm going to be bold. It's to be audacious. Maybe it's to say, I'm going to finally be brave. I'm going to take that step I was afraid to. God, whatever it is, whatever's in the next step for each of us, I ask you to drop that in our hearts. I ask you to give us such clarity. I need to do that. Not everything, not the whole journey, just that next step. And I thank you for that, God. I thank you've got a Nissan, a moment for every single person here, and you help us to be ready to understand and to walk into that. We thank you for that, God, in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast from Breakthrough Church. We hope it helps you in your life as a follower of Jesus. If you have any questions or would like someone to talk to or to pray with, we would love to hear from you. You can find all of our contact details at breakthrough.org.au. Have a great week.